A monopoly on mission-critical products. Welcome to this audio issue of Porter Stansberry's Complete Investor, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Law enforcement needs what this firm provides. It was pretty easy to nab Charles Katz, the sports bookie, who specialized in brokering illegal, interstate betting, was a creature of habit. Every afternoon, Katz ducked into the same bank of three phone booths on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles. There, he'd tie up the line for a couple of hours, uttering cryptic phrases like Oregon plus three, and give me Duquesne minus seven for a nickel. If he got caught, he was looking at 2 years in jail, or a $10,000, in 1965 dollars, fine. But Charles Katz was admittedly not the brightest light in the marquee. By early February 1965, a tip put the FBI on the bookie's tail. The feds decided to work smarter, rather than harder. Using then-new technology, they'd bug the phone booths and record the evidence. One morning, while Charles was still holed up in his apartment, FBI agents added an out-of-order sign to the middle booth and taped tiny microphones and a wire recorder to the tops of the other two booths. Then, between February 11th and February 16th, they listened in. A week later, the feds had proof on tape that Charles was running illegal numbers. They moved in to arrest him, which seemed to come as a surprise to Katz. As the agents led him away in cuffs, Charles offered his gambling expertise as a kind of homegrown plea bargain. "I can lead you to the big ones." The FBI did not take him up on his offer. An even bigger surprise for Charles was the fact that he'd eventually walk away scot-free. His case, Katz v. the United States, made it all the way to the Supreme Court. Katz's lawyers argued that, since the FBI tapped the line without a warrant, they'd violated Katz's Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable searches and seizures. And, eventually, the highest court in the land agreed with them. The court ruled that Katz had a reasonable expectation of privacy because he was standing in a closed-off telephone booth, and that without a warrant, the eavesdropping evidence was invalid. In the end, Katz v. United States was a resounding victory for individual privacy. And as far as President Lyndon B. Johnson was concerned, that would never do. The War on Responsibility sworn in 1963 after John F. Kennedy's assassination, LBJ had gotten right to work putting into motion his socialist utopian vision, the Great Society. As he explained in a sweeping 1964 speech at the University of Michigan, the Great Society rests on abundance and liberty for all. It demands an end to poverty and racial injustice, to which we are totally committed in our time. The Great Society, naturally, was run by a great big government. LBJ's $1 billion plan included vast overreach of schools, government assistance programs like food stamps, Head Start, Medicare, and Medicaid, which he termed the War on Poverty, and a big chunk of federal dollars going to fight a war on crime. It was really a thinly veiled ploy to lock in millions of Democrat voters for life. LBJ was a well-documented racist, known for pulling snakes out of his car trunk at gas stations with an African-American attendant. The stereotype was that blacks were extra afraid of snakes. According to one biographer, LBJ's rationale for handing out food stamps was, "I'll have them end voting Democratic for the next 200 years." And to be fair, it's worked so far. About 80% of black people consistently vote Democrat. 2 years after LBJ took office, Assistant Secretary of Labor, and later U.S. Senator Daniel Moynihan sounded the alarm in a detailed report, writing that government assistance programs actually undercut the fabric of society by taking men, particularly black men, out of the home. No one listened, least of all LBJ, possibly because that result was exactly what he'd hoped for. By the mid-60s, LBJ's war on poverty was in full swing, with the amount of government money spent on welfare programs doubling between 1965 and 1968. During the course of the decade, the out-of-wedlock birth rate for black households rose from around 23% to 30% as the number of fathers at home dwindled, with urban families disintegrating. The summer of 1965 exploded into race riots in 138 cities across America. LBJ's community action organizations, little government-run cells that funneled money to local community organizers, fomented the unrest, as the group sometimes used those funds to pay for professional agitators. The worst of the protests, the Watts Riot, wreathed LA's ghetto in flames for 6 days in mid-August 1965, leaving the city with over 1,000 people dead or injured, and $40 million in damages. Altogether, some 10,000 people were injured, along with millions of dollars of property damage during the long hot summers of the late 1960s. The riots gave LBJ an excuse to launch his war on crime, that is, to wrap local and state policing in the suffocating wings of Uncle Sam. and to make sure nobody had an expectation of autonomy or privacy ever again. The War on Freedom. A month after Watts, Johnson signed the Law Enforcement Assistance Act of 1965, which, for the first time, allowed the government to fund, train, and equip local police forces, essentially, making them mini federal police branches. The Department of Justice received $223 million in today's dollars to buy tanks, rifles, helicopters, and other weapons and riot control gear for local law enforcement, whom LBJ dubbed the frontline soldiers in this new war. Now the feds could feed you and punish you. Truly, in loco parentis. As a capstone, 3 years later, LBJ's ominous-sounding Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act created an official Law Enforcement Assistance Administration, LEA, within the Department of Justice. The LEA's big brother powers included expanded funding for the FBI to train police officers in riot control, harsh gun control measures, and, as a direct response to the Charles Katz case, a blanket exemption for the government to listen in on anyone's telephone conversations if they were deemed a threat to national security. National security, of course, was up to the feds to define. So much for poor old Charles the bookie. And later, so much for thousands of Americans whose rights were violated by warrantless wiretapping during the Patriot Act in the early 2000s. LBJ, increasingly unpopular because of how he handled the war in Vietnam, did not seek re-election in 1968, but the Great Society, like the Energizer Bunny, kept going and going. In 1966, Johnson's War on Poverty czar, Sergeant Shriver, was asked how long it would take to win the war. About 10 years, he replied. 23 years later, during his first inaugural address, President Ronald Reagan pointed out, "We fought a war on poverty, and poverty won. 60 years after the launch of the Great Society, we are still poor. About 20% of the U.S.'s national budget every year now goes to welfare, through some 80-plus government programs, while the poverty rate has hovered between 10% and 15% for the past half century. And we are still living in a police state. Federal police spending has more than quadrupled since the 1980s, and doubled since the 1990s, with big chunks of cash for all the alphabet agencies, FBI, CIA, NSA, DEA, and ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. That's not even mentioning ICE. The annual budget for the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency has leaped from $6 billion to $85 billion over the past decade, making it the highest-funded law enforcement agency in the U.S. This is not a broken system. It's a system that's functioning precisely as intended, a war on poverty that's really a war on individual responsibility, and a war on crime that's essentially a war on freedom. As Porter wrote recently, America as we know it is over. But LBJ's war on crime continues, having spread its tentacles into every police force and crime-fighting agency in the country, which has led to a cottage industry of wonderful, Lindy-style places to invest. The core product of the company we recommend in this issue is a war on crime staple that got its start during the riots of the 1960s, and the company has grown into a bona fide legal monopoly. It's a business the American police state will never be able to live without. The Apple of Public Safety Axon Enterprise, NASDAQ, Axon, is the leading provider of less lethal police weapons known as conducted energy weapons, Q. These stun gun devices use an electrical shock to disable individuals, without any lasting harm inflicted. Axon holds a near monopoly in these products, with its flagship Taser device making up 90% market share of the Qs sold to U.S. law enforcement agencies. It's also the leading provider of police body cameras and dashboard cameras, with 85% market share. The company sold $1.6 billion worth of Tasers and cameras last year, along with $1.2 billion in software subscriptions used to run these products. The beauty of this business model is how the hardware and software components combine into a powerful ecosystem that draws customers in and makes it very hard for them to ever leave. We call Axon the Apple, AAPL, of public safety because, just like the iPhone maker, the company uses its best-in-class hardware products as the entry point, or wedge, into its customers' wallets. After purchasing Axon's Tasers and cameras, law enforcement agencies around the world must then buy the software that collects, securely stores, and manages the data collected from these devices. Think about the hassle for iPhone users to move their photos, applications, and music libraries over to an Android phone. In the case of Axon, add in an extra layer of complication for maintaining data security and regulatory compliance for evidence used in prosecuting crimes. In both cases, the sticky hardware-software ecosystem is how both Apple and Axon evolved beyond just selling hit products to creating captive customers that stick around for decades. These ecosystems become self-reinforcing over time, where each new hardware device or software subscription deepens the lock-in effect. That's how these businesses lead to customers that don't just stick around, but continuously spend more money on products and subscriptions over time. The key metric we monitor for the health of an ecosystem business like this is the net revenue retention, NRR, which tells us how much recurring revenue a business retains from its existing customers. This excludes revenue from new customers acquired during that period. In Axon's case, the business routinely generates a NRR of 120% to 130%, meaning existing customers spend 20% to 30% more money with the company each year. This has made Axon one of the most enduring compounders in the market, generating compounded annual returns of 32% since its initial public offering, IPO, in 2001. That puts it right on par with Apple, with the two stocks each growing an initial $1,000 investment into over $1 million in the last 25 years. That compares with a similar investment in the S&P 500 growing to just $10,000 over the same time period. But whereas Apple is a mature $4 trillion enterprise that slowed to mid-single-digit growth in recent years, Axon is still in the early stages of its growth trajectory. The company just capped off its 14th consecutive quarter of 30% revenue growth, and we see a clear path for many years of 20% to 30% revenue growth ahead. Before getting into Axon's exciting future prospects, let's first rewind to see how it all got started. Making the Bullet Obsolete co-founder and CEO Rick Smith launched the company in 1993 after two of his friends were shot and killed in a road rage incident. Smith's founding vision was to make the Bullet obsolete. It was a bold mission for a 23-year-old kid working out of a garage on a shoestring budget. But what he lacked in experience and resources, he made up for in smarts. He graduated with a biology degree from Harvard in 3 years, then earned two MBAs in 2 years, at the University of Chicago and the University of Leuven in Belgium. After starting the company as Airtaser, he maintained a dogged sense of tenacity in overcoming half a decade of setbacks that almost bankrupted the company before finally achieving a breakthrough. The key stumbling block early came from the fact that Smith's first product was based on decades-old technology. NASA scientist Jack Cover invented the first taser device in the 1960s, named after an acronym from the title of his favorite childhood book, Tom A. Swift and His Electric Rifle by Victor Appleton. Smith contacted Cover to license the technology, along with tweaking the propulsion method to fire using compressed air instead of gunpowder. This gave rise to the company's first product called the Air Taser 34000, which fired two electrode darts from a handheld device up to a distance of 15 feet. The probes were designed to penetrate clothing and skin, creating a closed electrical loop that would send about 57 milliamps of electricity into the body, deterring a threat. But in practice, the Air Taser failed to provide reliable stopping power. In a 1995 demonstration for the Czech police, a cadet shrugged off the shock and pinned Smith in a wrestling hold. Smith then tried and failed to stop five additional Czech police officers with the Air Taser, eliciting laughter from the unfazed cadets. The embarrassing display was enough to prevent the device from gaining adoption among law enforcement agencies, the key customers Axon needed to generate any meaningful sales volume. So for the first half decade of its life, the Taser was relegated to a niche, high-end consumer product marketed in places like the Sharper Image catalog. With fledgling sales and limited funding, the company found itself teetering on the edge of insolvency by the late 1990s, boosting the power. But everything changed after Rick Smith worked with his brother Tom to develop new technology inside their M26 Taser in 1999. The M26 went beyond causing pain to physically hijacking the electrical signals the brain uses to tell muscles to contract. This was a significant breakthrough versus their prior taser technology that relied upon sheer physical pain to stop an attacker, which could be overcome with enough willpower. It was the first weapon on the market that delivered neuromuscular incapacitation. You can't fight through a muscle that's been electrically forced to seize up. The final change was redesigning the form factor to resemble a gun, along with a laser sight built directly into the unit, all of which made for more control over the weapon and greater accuracy. Rick Smith took his new and improved taser back on the demonstration roadshow, and the test subjects weren't laughing this time. The M26 consistently took down even the toughest cadets on the force. And when it became available for sale in 2000, the orders poured in, with $3.5 million of sales in its first year, followed by $7 million in 2001. With a proven product on the market and sales growing at triple digits, the company went public in May 2001 as Taser International, changing its name to Axon Enterprise in 2017. Going public gave Axon a much-needed capital infusion, which it invested aggressively into new product innovation. The company has remained at the leading edge of innovation ever since, introducing newer and more capable Taser models every few years. The relentless pace of innovation has not only kept Taser as the dominant industry leader, but it's also allowed the company to charge premium prices along the way. The newest model, Taser 10, now packs five separate cartridges into a single weapon, versus reloading after just one or two shots. Plus, the Taser 10 extended the maximum range up to 45 feet, nearly doubling the 25-foot range of prior models. These new features increase the odds that officers will deploy tasers versus pulling out a gun. In a LinkedIn post, CEO Rick Smith noted that gun-related deaths were down about 10% nationally since the release of Taser 10, with one major law enforcement agency reporting a 40% drop in officer-involved shootings, a drop the agency credited the Taser 10 as a driving factor. The success of the Taser 10 has helped propel Axon's revenue growth to above 30% annually in each of the last 3 years, and all signs point toward more growth ahead. In early February, President Donald Trump personally invested between $1 million and $5 million in Axon. Trump's investment came just weeks before U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, posted a notice seeking to acquire 17,800 new Qs along with an unlimited supply of cartridges. The $220 million order would quadruple ICE's existing inventory, although the contract has not yet been awarded. And while the IC notice does not specify which company would supply the devices, all signs point toward Axon. According to CNBC, three policing experts stated that only one Q on the market meets the IC's contract specifications, and that's Axon's Taser 10. It's also worth noting that Axon is the current incumbent supplier for IC, with a prior $16.1 million order for the Taser 10, which is set to expire in a month, on August 21. We suspect Axon will win the contract, and it would be a substantial deal for Axon, worth about 25% of the company's total Taser revenue last year. And while these near-term catalysts are promising, Axon shares have jumped more than 30% on the news of the IC's contract and Trump's investment. The real value lies in the whole product ecosystem, and the virtually impenetrable moat Axon has built around its business through a series of self-reinforcing product flywheels. Next, we'll take a look at another key aspect of this product ecosystem, cameras. The camera that built an empire. By the late 2000s, Taser International controlled 90% of the market for Qs, but Rick Smith had a problem that no amount of market share could solve. Every time an officer fired a Taser, somebody ended up in court. Lawsuits followed the weapon everywhere. Excessive force claims, wrongful death suits, disputed accounts of what happened in the chaotic seconds before the trigger was pulled. And in almost every case, the outcome hinged on the same question: whose story do you believe? Smith's insight was that the answer shouldn't be a story at all. It should be a recording. In 2009, Taser launched the Axon Body Camera, a small, chest-mounted device that captured an officer's eye view of every encounter. The pitch to police chiefs was simple: the camera protects your officers. When there's video, frivolous complaints evaporate, and legitimate ones get resolved on the evidence rather than in the press. The data backed him up. In a now-famous 2012 experiment, the police department in Rialto, California, randomly assigned body cameras across its patrol shifts. The results were staggering. Complaints against officers fell nearly 90%, and use of force incidents dropped by roughly 60%. Behavior changed on both sides of the lens. The study became the single most cited piece of evidence in policing reform, and it turned body cameras from a novelty into a policy imperative. Then came the accelerant. In August 2014, the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, an encounter with no video record, litigated entirely through conflicting eyewitness accounts, ignited a national demand for police accountability. Within months, the Obama White House proposed federal funding to put tens of thousands of body cameras on American officers, and legislatures across the country began mandating them. Practically overnight, a product Taser had been patiently selling for 5 years became something every police department in America was required to buy. Smith pressed the advantage ruthlessly. In 2017, the company made two moves that would change the long-term trajectory of the company. First, it changed its name. Taser International became Axon Enterprise, telling the world the stun gun was no longer the main event. Second, it offered every police officer in the United States a free body camera, plus a full year of software, at no cost. Wall Street gasped at the giveaway, but Smith understood something the market didn't. The camera was never the product, the data was. The flywheel engine. Evidence.com. The problem with putting a video camera on every police officer in America was the terabytes of data these devices generated each month. Police departments were unequipped for this transition towards large-scale data management. So alongside its first body camera in 2009, Axon launched Evidence.com, a cloud platform that ingests footage automatically, tags it to the case file, preserves the chain of custody, and lets an agency search, redact, and share evidence with a few clicks. The camera was the wedge. Evidence.com became the moat. And this is where the flywheel begins to turn. Every camera Axon sells generates data. That data has to live somewhere, and it flows, frictionlessly and automatically, into Evidence.com. Once an agency's evidence lives on the platform becomes the agency's operating system. Prosecutors pull case files from it, records clerks fulfill public records requests through it, supervisors audit officer conduct on it, and the entire workflow of the department reorganizes around it. That entrenchment makes the next action device, a dash camera, an interview room camera, a taser that automatically activates every nearby body cam when it's drawn, an easy, almost automatic purchase, because it plugs into infrastructure the agency already runs on. And every new device generates more data, which deepens the entrenchment further. This is the flywheel Axon created that transformed its business from selling one-off devices to selling an entire ecosystem that keeps customers locked in and competitors locked out. Consider what it would actually take for a police department to leave Axon. It would need to migrate years of legal evidence, under seal, with chain of custody documentation intact, to a new system. Retrain every officer, records clerk, and supervisor. Rebuild integrations with prosecutors and courts. Recertify compliance with federal criminal justice data security standards. And do all of it while the department continues operating around the clock, because crime doesn't pause for an IT migration. No police chief wants to explain why a piece of critical evidence went missing during a software transition. This is why 95% of Axon's revenue comes from recurring, multi-year contracts. Agencies typically sign 5- and 10-year subscription bundles that package the hardware, the software, and automatic device upgrades into a single per-officer monthly price. As a result of creating a captive customer base, Axon's competition has withered. Axon absorbed VIEVU, once the number 2 body camera maker, in 2018. Motorola Solutions bought its way into the market and remains the only credible rival, but Axon's platform now serves the vast majority of major U.S. law enforcement agencies, and, increasingly, federal agencies and international forces. The genius of the free camera giveaway in 2017 is now obvious in hindsight. Axon wasn't giving away the product. It was seeding the flywheel. Once the camera footage started flowing into evidence.com, the customer was, for all practical purposes, permanent. And the wheel keeps spinning. Axon is now evolving beyond storing and managing evidence into powering the full incident lifecycle, from the moment a 911 call is placed to the moment a case is closed. Intake, with the acquisitions of Prepared, closed in late 2025, and Carbyne, closed in Q1 of 2026 for $625 million, Axon is pushing upstream into the first 120 seconds of an emergency, modernizing 911 dispatch with AI and live video under a unified Axon 911 platform response. Axon Fusus unifies live feeds from body cams, drones, and city cameras into a real-time situational awareness map resolution. Tools like DraftOne, part of Axon's new push into artificial intelligence, AI, capabilities, automatically drafts police reports and frees up the endless paperwork that once crippled officer productivity. DraftOne is a preview of Axon's next decade as it enters the AI era. Axon sits on one of the largest repositories of real-world video data ever assembled, and DraftOne mines it, using AI to convert body camera footage into a first draft of the police report, automating paperwork that consumes as much as 40% of an officer's shift. For a profession in a permanent staffing crisis, tools like DraftOne offer an immediate solution to hiring more bodies. Since it's a fraction of the cost of hiring more officers, DraftOne has become the fastest-selling product in Axon's history. And for Axon, becoming more deeply ingrained into the critical daily workflows of law enforcement agencies means the flywheel will continue compounding. Each new product leads to more integrated bundles, pulling more users and devices onto the network. More usage generates more data, and more data improves automation and AI capabilities, leading to better products, ultimately leading to more revenue per customer. We can see the result in retention. Customers don't just renew, they expand deeper into the Axon platform, year after year. The next wedge is Axon has begun applying the same playbook, hardware wedge, data capture, and platform entrenchment into new device categories. Drones are the next frontier, an emerging segment that's just getting started, but growing at triple-digit rates. Axon's Drone as First Responder, DFR, program lets agencies dispatch a camera-equipped drone to a 911 call in seconds, streaming live video into the platform before the first patrol car arrives. It also acquired DeDrone in 2024, which added airspace security technology to detect and track hostile drones, a business with the potential to evolve beyond domestic policing into military applications. A recent Orlando, Florida, demonstration for this new product category led to the city's police department purchasing its own DFR network. 11 drones stationed on 9 rooftop docks across the city, launched automatically in response to qualifying 911 calls. The $6.8 million program was executed as an amendment to Orlando's existing Axon contract, which already covered the department's body cameras, fleet cameras, and tasers. no lengthy installment process, and no new vendor to certify. That is the advantage Axon enjoys as the incumbent with an already ingrained platform across thousands of law enforcement agencies. The Orlando case study showcases the Axon flywheel in motion, and the runway is enormous. Management is still in the early days of monetizing the global budget capacity for its existing core technologies at around $19 billion. With $3 billion in total revenue over the last 12 months, Axon has only tapped into 15% of the total addressable market for these products. The biggest near-term opportunity is global expansion, which Axon has only scratched the surface on. Over the last decade, Axon's international business has grown from virtually nothing to 20% of the business today. With international revenue compounding at 64% annually, this segment is growing more than twice as fast as the overall business and reached $561 million in sales last year. The international opportunity is seen in countries like the UK and Australia, both of which recently made large purchases of the Taser 10. We're seeing the same adoption of Axon's body and dashboard cameras across a growing number of international markets. And as those hardware devices proliferate into overseas law enforcement agencies, we expect the same flywheel of adoption into Axon's digital ecosystem to kick into gear, leading to decades of recurring revenue from locked-in customers. Meanwhile, the company's drone segment is also well-positioned for rapid global expansion. When Axon acquired Dedrone in 2024, it was already sold in dozens of international countries. Now it has a foothold in 40 countries globally, including 6 of the G7 countries with over 900 installations worldwide. With the segment growing at 300% year-over-year, YAI, and bookings increasing by an even faster 500% YAI in Q1, we expect revenue to continue growing at a rapid pace in this segment. With the ongoing momentum from Taser 10 sales and its fast-growing drone segment, plus international expansion, Axon sales increased 34% YAI to reach $807 million in Q1 of 2026. Future contracted bookings jumped at an even faster rate of 44% YAI to $14.3 billion, leading management to raise its revenue growth outlook this year from 28% to 31% YAI. Meanwhile, Axon's customer retention remains stellar, with a net revenue retention at 125% in Q1. This is the flywheel in a single statistic. Agencies don't just renew. They climb the bundle ladder, adding seats, hardware, and AI features, putting it all together, and we have little doubt about the inevitability of the business. It's a founder-led, monopoly-anchored platform growing at 30% plus, with world-class retention rates from a locked-in customer base. The business model is proven. The only question left is what price to pay. What Axon is worth today? The key to analyzing Axon's financial picture lies in recognizing that this is really two businesses with very different economics. The first is a hardware monopoly. The crown jewel of this segment is the Taser franchise, which will generate $1 billion in revenue this year while growing at around 20% annually, with significant near-term upside from the IC's contract mentioned earlier. It holds 90% of the market, as the sole qualified vendor on the majority of its contracts. There's also the body and dashboard cameras, and the emerging drone segment that will provide the next engine of hardware growth. Axon's hardware business grew 33% YAI last quarter with trailing 12-month revenue of $1.7 billion, at roughly 50% gross margins, generating $856 million in gross profit. These are Apple-class hardware economics, and they exist because Axon is effectively the monopoly supplier of these products. But the hardware's real job isn't the profit it books, it's the data it feeds into the high-margin software platform. Axon's second business is the real cash cow, the software platform that all of its hardware devices feed data into. Axon Evidence, Fusus, Draft One, and the rest of the public safety operating system. Together, these products generated about $1.7 billion in revenue this year at a 75% gross margin, margins on par with NVIDIA, NVDA, and Micron Technology, MU. But unlike chipmakers, the margins aren't coming from a generational cyclical boom. These are mission-critical, recurring software subscriptions that customers must buy to keep their organizations running. That means pricing power, which helps fuel consistent growth of 30% to 40% a year for this segment. The rapid growth in software sales is part of management's intentional strategy of concentrating more of the business toward this high-margin segment. In the last 10 years, software sales have risen from 17% of total revenue to 43% today. And we expect this trajectory will continue, eventually making software the dominant driver of the business economics over time. The shift toward high-margin software sales is transforming the quality of Axon's earnings profile. A decade ago, Axon was earning single-digit profit margins. This year, profit margins are on track to reach an all-time high of 18% and then expand further to 20% over the next 2 years, based on current estimates. Applying an 18% margin on management's forecast of $3.7 billion in sales works out to $643 in net income in 2026, or $7.71 in earnings per share, EPS. Trading at around $550 per share, this puts Axon's valuation at roughly 70x this year's expected EPS. This may sound expensive, but there's two key things to keep in mind when analyzing a stock like Axon. First, there's the reliability of its growth profile. Analysts can quibble about whether the growth rate will come in at 28% or 32% on any given year. But zooming out, given the consistency of its retention rates, there's little doubt about its ability to regularly compound revenue at a mid-minus 20% to low-minus 30% rate. That growth profile, and the reliability of the growth outlook, commands a valuation premium. Second, there's the fact that we can count on expanding profit margins as the business shifts toward higher-margin software revenue. That means Axon's earnings will likely compound at an even faster rate than top-line revenue growth. Putting it all together, Axon can quickly grow into what looks like an optically expensive valuation multiple on near-term earnings. Based on our assumptions laid out above of roughly 30% revenue growth and margins reaching 20%, current forecasts show Axon's EPS reaching $10.54 in 2027 and $13.82 in 2028. That means Axon's 70x multiple on 2026 EPS drops to 51x on the 2027 earnings estimates, and to just under 40x the 2028 forecasted numbers. As a result, investors are willing to pay up to own shares at today's higher valuation, knowing that the shares will quickly become cheaper based on the future earnings trajectory. The chart below shows that Axon has always commanded a premium valuation multiple, with the multiple rarely trading below 40x forward EPS estimates and routinely commanding a triple-digit multiple, currently trading at roughly 58x the blended EPS estimates over the next 12 months. Axon is at the low end of its historical valuation range. While it could get cheaper from here, we believe it's worth getting into Axon now and taking the risk of a short-term correction in the valuation multiple. That's because we see very little risk in the company continuing to execute on its growth trajectory, and that earnings trajectory will ultimately be the dominant factor driving the share price over time, setting aside the short-term volatility in the multiple that investors are willing to pay. We believe Axon is one of the highest quality companies in the world. Historically, buying at similar valuation levels has led to market-crushing returns over any long-term time horizon of at least 3 years. If we can assume the valuation simply remains around current levels, the share should rise in line with earnings growth over the next several years, which should compound at above 30% annually. We do suggest using a small initial position size, given the high volatility in the share price, which will likely provide better entry points along the way. Should that opportunity come, we suggest adding to positions in what we believe is one of the most durable long-term compounders in the market. Action to take: buy Axon Enterprise, NASDAQ, Axon, up to $550 per share. Review of recommendations: Venture Global's long-term outlook remains bullish while global energy prices have dropped following the progress made in resolving the Iran conflict. Liquefied natural gas, LNG, exporter: Venture Global, NYSE, VG, continues finding ways to win despite the low price environment. The company reported excellent Q1 financial results on May 12, including a 59% YoY increase in revenue to $4.6 billion. Net income rose by a more modest 23% YoY to $488 million, as lower prices partially offset higher volume growth. The primary contributor to the company's growth has come from the ramp-up of production volumes at the company's Plaquemine facility, which contributed to a record-setting 130 cargoes shipped in Q1, up 111% YoY. The company continues executing on its growth trajectory while maintaining operational excellence. April 15 marked the one-year anniversary of the start of commercial operations at Calcasieu Pass in Cameron Parish, Louisiana, and the company has now exported more than 150 contracted cargoes from the facility without missing a single scheduled delivery. It also continues laying the groundwork for aggressive future expansion, including its most ambitious exporting facility yet, the CP2 project, located adjacent to Calcasieu Pass. The project will consist of two phases, with each phase adding 14 million tons per year, MTPY, of nameplate capacity for a combined total of 28 MTPY. This would make it one of the largest LNG export plants in the world. Phase I of CP2 is already underway, with management expecting initial production to begin in the second half of 2027. And on the Q1 call, management noted it has now achieved a final investment decision on Phase 2 of the CP2 project, along with securing an $8.6 billion project financing round for the facility. This brings the total committed financing for CP2 to $20.7 billion. We expect CP2 will begin production by year-end 2028, and when both phases of the project are running at full capacity, Venture Global will likely overtake Cheniere Energy to earn the title of America's largest LNG exporter. Thus, while the shares have been hit on the overall decline in energy prices over the past few months, the long-term picture remains as bullish as ever. If you don't yet have a position, the recent drop in the share price has provided an opportunity. Action to take. Buy Venture Global, NYSE, VG. Up to $30.38 per share. Nike's turnaround gets a tariff windfall. Shoe and apparel giant Nike NYSE, NKE, reported fiscal Q4 results on June 30 that beat expectations. EPS of 72 cents quadrupled from 14 cents a year ago, but 52 cents of that came from the expected recovery of $986 million in tariffs after the U.S. Supreme Court struck down duties imposed under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. Strip out the windfall and adjusted EPS was 20 cents, still comfortably ahead of the 13 cents consensus. Revenue of $11.0 billion declined 1% from a year ago, down 4% currency neutral, but beat estimates. The channel rebalancing meant to sell more through retailers and less direct to consumer continued. Wholesale revenue rose 4% to $6.6 billion, while Nike Direct fell 7% to $4.1 billion, with digital down 12%. North America grew 3%, led by a 10% jump in wholesale. Greater China remains the problem child, down 12%, and Converse cratered another 32%. The brightest spot is running, which posted its fifth consecutive quarter of double-digit growth, roughly $1 billion in added revenue and the first durable proof point of CEO Elliott Hill's sport-led strategy. The sport-led strategy is working where it's been applied, it just isn't big enough yet to offset streetwear erosion. Management expects flat earnings through the first half of fiscal 2027, and outgoing CFO Matt Friend warned marketplace conditions won't improve before then. Shares are down more than 35% this year. The insider cluster we flagged in April, Bob Swan, CEO Hill, and Apple CEO and board member Tim Cook all buying, hasn't been invalidated. With management itself telling you the next two quarters bring no relief, Nike remains a show-me story, but the business is beginning to stabilize. We're monitoring the Jordan and sportswear order books for the real turnaround. Action to take. Buy Nike, NYSE, NKE, up to $46.52 per share. Eli Lilly extends its obesity dominance. Eli Lilly, NYSE, LLY, continues to redefine the pharmaceutical landscape. Shares hit an all-time high earlier this month, boosted by the closing of its $7.8 billion acquisition of Centessa Pharmaceuticals on June 24. The deal brings Lilly a pipeline of orexin receptor 2 agonists targeting narcolepsy and other sleep-wake disorders. It's a small deal relative to Lilly's size, but it matters strategically. Lilly is using its GLP-1 cash windfall to build out a second and third leg of growth before the obesity trade inevitably matures, diversifying into neuroscience rather than staying a one-drug class story that lives or dies with Zepbound. Zepbound and Foundayo were added to the new Medicare GLP-1 bridge program starting July 1, capping patient costs at $50 per month. This is arguably the single biggest catalyst in the update. Medicare has historically been a major gap in obesity drug coverage, and J.P. Morgan Chase estimates roughly 20 million Medicare patients could now qualify. That's a massive expansion of the addressable market, but it comes at a cost, since the $50 cap means Lilly collects less per prescription. The trade is volume for price, and so far Wall Street likes the trade. On its weight loss drug pipeline, retatrutide keeps delivering. In the TRIUMPH-1 trial, participants on the 12-milligram dose lost an average of 70.3 pounds, 28.3%, over 80 weeks. And it's not just obesity. Lilly's immunology, oncology, and neuroscience medicines collectively grew 160% YoY last quarter. The stock has added roughly $400 billion in market value over the past year, pushing Lilly's market cap past $1 trillion. Action to take. Buy Eli Lilly, NYSE, LLY, up to $1,828.75 per share. Texas Pacific extends its pivot toward data centers. Texas Pacific Land, NYSE, TPL, continues building out its role as critical infrastructure for the AI boom. On June 23, Texas Pacific announced an agreement with Chevron, CVX, to provide land and brackish water resources for Project Kilby, a large-scale power generation facility Chevron is developing in Reeves County, Texas, to support a customer data center. Texas Pacific contributed surface acreage in exchange for cash and the exclusive right to source aquifer-derived water for the project, notably, brackish, non-potable groundwater rather than freshwater, which reinforces the company's positioning as a responsible water partner as West Texas competes for gigawatt-scale compute infrastructure. This follows the $42.5 million land sale disclosed in Texas Pacific's Q1 report on May 6, which produced record quarterly revenue of $236.8 million and net income of $142.9 million, up 21% YoY, or $2.07 per diluted share, beating consensus estimates. Management said the urgency among hyperscalers and AI labs to secure West Texas acreage keeps increasing, and Texas Pacific's roughly 880,000 surface acres remain a natural draw for power-hungry digital infrastructure. The core royalty business is still a cash machine, zero debt, a $500 million undrawn credit facility, and a business model built on royalties, easements, and water sales that requires little capital reinvestment. Shares have rallied more than 52% in the first half of 2026, helped both by the AI infrastructure build-out and by rising oil and gas prices tied to the conflict in Iran earlier this summer. Action to take: buy Texas Pacific Land, NYSE, TPL, up to $524.07 per share. Credit acceptance extends its rally as credit environment stabilizes. The subprime auto sector is struggling because of high borrowing rates and high inflation, which both hit lower-income consumers hardest. Yet subprime lender credit acceptance, NASDAQ, CAC, has emerged as the clear standout, up roughly 23% since our May 16 portfolio update, and up 35% over the past 6 months, outpacing the S&P 500 by more than 27 percentage points. The company's Q1 report, May 5, has been fully vindicated. Revenue rose 44.8% YoY to $580 million, 24% ahead of consensus, while EPS of $12.40 grew 43.2%. But the most important development wasn't its earnings. The quarterly change in forecasted net cash flows came in at just minus 0.1%, $9.1 million, the smallest revision in 3 years. After three consecutive years of negative revisions to expected loan collections, the underwriting model is finally calibrated to the current consumer environment. That's the leading indicator we've been waiting for. Action to take: buy credit acceptance, NASDAQ, CAC, up to $815.66 per share. Celsius under pressure. From Alani New Investigation, Celsius shares dropped 8% on June 4 after Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton launched an investigation into Alani New under the Texas Deceptive Trade Practices Act, DTPA. The investigation was triggered by the death of 17-year-old Larissa Rodriguez, who died last October of a heart condition linked to excessive caffeine consumption. Rodriguez was reportedly a regular consumer of Alani New drinks, the brand Celsius acquired last year, including consuming one drink on the day of her passing. Standard 12-ounce Celsius and Alani New drinks contain 200 milligrams, mg, of caffeine, a level considered dangerous for adolescents. The Texas AG alleges that Alani New's marketing is designed to appeal to young consumers, and that the drink labels fail to adequately warn of the risks of excessive caffeine consumption. A few things to consider when assessing the potential impact here. First, the Texas AG hasn't formally sued Alani New or Celsius. This is merely an investigation at the moment. Second, both Celsius and Alani New labels specifically state that the drinks are not recommended for children, people sensitive to caffeine, pregnant women or women who are nursing. And while it's true that these energy drinks contain more caffeine than a typical 8-ounce serving of coffee, many coffee chains like Starbucks routinely serve larger drinks containing 400 milligrams of caffeine without any warning labels whatsoever. Finally, there's historic precedent for similar investigations and lawsuits failing to result in any significant legal action. Most notably, San Francisco City Attorney Dennis Herrera sued Monster Beverage, MNST, in May 2013, alleging the company marketed its highly caffeinated energy drinks to children as young as 6 years old. The Monster case dragged on for roughly 2.5 years, and ultimately concluded with a 2015 settlement in which Monster made modest marketing and labeling adjustments. The company did not admit wrongdoing, and no court ruling was issued about its caffeine levels being unsafe or its marketing illegally targeted children. So while the investigation could act as a drag on the stock in the near term, we view the odds of any meaningful legal action against Celsius or Alani Nu as low. Meanwhile, the fundamental bullish picture for Celsius remains intact. The company reported blowout Q1 results on May 7. Revenue surged 138% YoY to $783 million, or $22 million better than analyst forecasts, while EPS jumped 128% to 41 cents, or 12 cents ahead of expectations. The triple-digit growth was fueled largely by the addition of Alani New sales into the Celsius portfolio, which Celsius acquired in Q2 2025. Alani New is the fastest-growing new entrant into the energy drink category, and it shows no signs of slowing momentum with sales up 100% YoY in Q1. Another bright spot in the report was the strength in international markets, where revenue grew 55% to $35 million. The company is expected to generate $1.61 in EPS this year, followed by $2 in 2027. Trading at around $30, that puts its valuation at just over 18x this year's earnings and 15x next year's EPS. That's a steep discount to the broader market and peers like Monster and Coca-Cola, KO, despite a faster growth rate and a discount we don't expect to last. Action to take: buy Celsius Holdings, NASDAQ, sell, up to $31.06 per share. Versemit Royalties shares fall, performance rises. Shares of Versemit Royalties, NASDAQ, VEMIT, have fallen 19% since we recommended them on April 18th. Two forces are driving the decline, neither of them are fundamental. First, the price of gold has pulled back from over $4,500 to $4,000, pressured by oil-driven inflation fears from the U.S.-Iran war and Fed rate hike uncertainty. The entire royalty sector is weak. In fact, the 50-day moving average of leading royalty company Franco-Nevada's, FNV, crossed below its 200-day on July 1. Second, and more acutely, on July 6, Equinox Gold, EQX, sold 8.71 million VEMIT shares via a block trade, cutting its stake from 10.7% to 2.7%. That's roughly 8% of shares outstanding hitting the market in a day. None of this changes the underlying momentum in the business. Q1 2026 earnings were phenomenal: $24.0 million in revenue, 594% YoY growth, 4,913 gold equivalent ounces, GEO, and $19.5 million in operating cash flow. The $360 million Aske Creek stream closed in April, with first gold expected to be produced in Q2 2027. Full-year GEO guidance of 20,000 to 23,000 was reaffirmed, and that's before Aske contributes a single ounce. At $9, the stock trades at roughly 10x 2026 cash flow for a company on track to nearly triple production by 2028. Action to take: buy Versemit Royalties, VMET, up to $24 per share, closing out Trump's secret stocks. We launched Trump's secret stocks in December 2024 on a simple premise that a handful of companies were positioned to benefit from specific policies of the incoming administration. A year and a half later, the honest assessment is that most of those tailwinds never arrived, or never showed up in the one place that matters: the share price. That's not to say the basket disappointed across the board. One position has roughly tripled, and two others are comfortably higher. But in the names that worked, we can't credibly attribute the gains to anything the administration did. And in the names that lagged, the Trump-specific catalyst we were counting on simply didn't materialize. Either way, Trump policy is no longer a useful reason to own any of these stocks. So we're retiring the section, but not exiting all the positions, selling one, and folding the remaining four into the main complete investor list of recommendations, where we'll continue to track them on their individual merits. Core Natural Resources: the right business, the wrong reason. We added Core Natural Resources, NYSE, Corner, to the Trump basket to play the administration's vocal support for coal, the beautiful, clean coal rhetoric, the push to keep aging plants online, and a White House friendlier to fossil fuels than any in a generation. That support has been real. It just hasn't done much for the stock. Shares are down about 18% from our December 2024 entry, and whatever policy tailwind exists has been swamped by the coal cycle itself. As we discussed in our May issue, the one stretch where Core Natural Resources did rally this past spring was a geopolitically driven spike in energy prices that lifted the shares. That premium has since faded. Corner has given back roughly 8% over the past 2 months. The business, though, keeps executing. Q1 results beat expectations, with adjusted EBITDA of $179.9 million and net income of $21.0 million, or 41 cents per share, against a consensus near 29 cents, as the Leer South and West Elk mines returned to targeted production. Management returned $47 million to shareholders in the quarter, and has now returned $292 million since the start of 2025. Q2 results are due in August. We still like Core Natural Resources as a low-cost, export-levered coal producer. We just no longer see it as a Trump story. We're removing it from this basket and will continue to follow it in the energy and commodities section of our complete investor recommendations. Action to take: buy Core Natural Resources, NYSE, Corner, up to $107.18 per share. British American Tobacco is winning on pouches, not politics. British American Tobacco, NYSE, BTI, has been a strong performer, up nearly 48% since we added it to Trump's secret stocks in April 2025. And, also like Roivant, those gains are hard to credit to the administration. Our Trump angle was narrow. that tariffs on China would trigger a customs crackdown on illegal disposable vapes and clear the field for British Tobacco's FDA-authorized views. That may still help at the margin, but it isn't what has moved the stock. What's moved is the growth engine of the entire nicotine complex, oral pouches, where British Tobacco's Velo brand keeps taking share. As we covered in June, the company's first half financial update raised its less harmful revenue outlook to mid-teens growth for 2026 and reaffirmed full-year guidance of 3% to 5% revenue growth and 5% to 8% EPS growth, with Velo extending its global volume share lead in the category. The company is due to report half-year results on July 30. In the meantime, British Tobacco has confirmed £1.3 billion of buybacks for 2026 and continues to pay a dividend yielding north of 5%. A new permanent CFO, Dragos Constantinescu, joins in September. We already own British American Tobacco in the Forever Stock section of the Complete Investor Portfolio, so we're closing it out of the Trump basket and will continue to follow it there. Action to take. Buy British American Tobacco, NYSE, BTI, up to $86.54 per share. Roivant's payoff came from the courtroom, not the White House. Roivant Sciences, NASDAQ, Roiv, has been the standout of this basket, up nearly 200% from our December 2024 entry. But almost none of that owes to the Trump administration. Our original thesis leaned partly on Robert F. Kennedy Jr. running the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, creating openings for Roivant to pluck discarded drug assets from Big Pharma. That's not what drove the stock. What drove it was execution and a courtroom win. In March, Roivant's subsidiary Genevant, with partner Arbutus, reached a $2.25 billion global settlement with Moderna, mRNA, over the lipid nanoparticle delivery technology used in its COVID-19 vaccines, $950 million payable upfront in July, plus up to $1.3 billion contingent on a favorable appellate ruling. This is precisely the hidden asset we flagged in the original December 2024 report, where we pegged the litigation's expected value at roughly $2.1 billion. Roivant put the proceeds toward a $1 billion buyback, and the related Pfizer/BioNTech case remains outstanding, a potential second payday. The pipeline has delivered two. Lead drug brepocitinib won Food and Drug Administration, FDA, priority review in dermatomyositis and breakthrough therapy designation in cutaneous sarcoidosis, and Immunovant's IMVT-1402 posted strong data in difficult-to-treat rheumatoid arthritis. Q4 results, reported May 20, showed income from continuing operations of $355.7 million and a cash position of roughly $4.3 billion, with several more late-stage readouts due in the second half of 2026. This is a genuinely good business executing well, but on its own merits, not Washington's. We're moving Roivant to the exponential growth section of our complete investor recommendations, where we'll continue to follow it. Action to take. Hold Roivant Sciences, NASDAQ, Roiv, Viper Energy's driver, was oil, not Washington Viper Energy. NASDAQ, Vanome, is modestly higher, up about 16% from our April 2025 entry. But here again, the Trump administration has had little direct impact, outside of fighting the war with Iran. Like Core Natural Resources, Viper caught a lift from the spring's geopolitically driven spike in energy prices, and, like Core, it has given much of that back as prices normalized. The shares traded near a 52-week high above $51 in early May. They're back around $43 today. The underlying business remains excellent. As we reported in May, Q1 results beat handily, with adjusted earnings of $1.22 per share against a 45-cent consensus, and management raised full-year oil production guidance to imply more than 5% organic growth. Viper also returned 90% of distributable cash flow to shareholders in the quarter, 94 cents per share, split between a 68-cent dividend and 28 cents in buybacks, and continues to integrate its Riverbend royalty acquisition. Second quarter results are due August 3. There's nothing wrong with Viper. There's simply nothing Trump-specific about why we own it today. As a best-in-class, capital-efficient royalty holder, it belongs in the energy and commodities section of our complete investor recommendations, where we'll continue to follow it. Action to take. Hold Viper Energy, NASDAQ, Venom, selling Apollo into the private credit squeeze. Apollo Global Management, NYSE, AAPO, remains a formidable franchise. Assets under management crossed $1 trillion in Q1. Fee-related earnings hit a record and grew 30%, and the stock trades cheaply at under 13x forward earnings. The permanent capital inside its Athene insurance arm is structurally insulated from the redemption pressure now hitting the industry, and management has been unusually candid about the risks. None of that is in dispute. But our reason for owning Apollo was specific. that CEO Mark Rowan's closeness to Trump and a deregulatory M&A boom would drive the shares. That thesis hasn't paid off. The stock is down roughly 27% from our December 2024 entry. The deal-making wave never materialized the way we expected, and Rowan's political connections have produced no visible edge for shareholders. Worse, one of the engines we highlighted in the original write-up, Apollo's dominance in private credit, has turned into a key risk. In late June, its flagship retail private credit fund, Apollo Debt Solutions, capped withdrawals at 5% for the second straight quarter after investors requested to redeem roughly 17% of the fund, about $2.4 billion. Shares fell 6% on the news. Private credit valuation and disclosure practices now sit at the center of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission's, SEC, 2026 examination priorities, and Rowan himself says he expects regulatory scrutiny to follow, which is why Apollo is racing to put daily pricing on its entire credit book by year-end. Even Q1, for all its record fee earnings, carried a $1.9 billion GAAP net loss on a $1.7 billion insurance-related tax charge and a fresh credit loss tied to the failure of a UK lender. We're not calling Apollo a broken business, but we bought it for a Trump thesis that didn't work, and we'd rather step aside than hold through a private credit overhang and a tightening regulatory spotlight. We're closing the position. Action to take. Sell Apollo Global Management, NYSE. APO. Check out the full list of recommendations here. F. Porter Stansberry Porter & Company. Stevenson, Maryland. For important disclosures and disclaimers, please visit our legal disclosures page. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hoped you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our top 3 best buys where we highlight 3 current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find the top 3 best buys under the best buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.